Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
All right, welcome to the REI Diamond Show. Brock, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Dan. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were talking about a little location stamping, and I do that often for the listeners, just kind of give people context of where you live and what markets you're kind of operating in. Would you mind maybe starting off your backstory with some of the locations you've been to, where you're at now, and a summary of your business?
Yeah, sure. So, I started this off, or I started my journey in Memphis. That's where I was born and raised. I had a little lawn mowing business there that was mowing foreclosures for the bank because it was in the middle of the great real estate depression. That was my first business and really how I made my first little couple thousand dollars. And at the same time, I had a job at IHOP. This was in high school. My father was always in construction and all different types of construction, but he was really bored, and all of his friends and everybody in construction at the time in the building industry was either going bankrupt or just semi-retired or whatever, because it was, the industry was dead. But I remember back then he told me that I should check into these foreclosure auctions. And I remember still being in high school. He had a speeding ticket that day, and I didn't expect to see him, but I was down at the courthouse skipping school and checking out these auctions just like he told me. And here I see him walking up the steps so he could go to his speeding ticket court date. And we kind of locked eyes, and that was kind of a funny situation there. I was a little nervous he'd be upset, but turned out he was super proud. And that was like a nice sense of affirmation, like you may be doing the right thing here, even though he told me to do it.
So were you cutting school then? Is that like the other part?
I cut a lot of school, Dan. Yeah.
Okay.
Barely made it through there. I was cutting so much of it because they had a little rule. If you cut more than 50%, then you have to redo the year. And I saw that transcript not long ago. I found it at my parents' house cleaning some stuff up, and it was like 48% for 2 years in a row. So barely made it through there.
Wow.
But yeah, it just didn't interest me. Not to promote that to any younger people listening, but it just didn't interest me. But that didn't mean I was just taking all my time that I should be using on school and effing off. It was, let's focus it on something that can promote life and make things better a lot quicker than, maybe a college degree or whatever in my mind at the time. So that's where that journey kind of started.
Nice.
The auctions.
Okay. So you started with auctions, you're cutting grass, then you're cutting school, then you're buying foreclosures. And we were, from my research, I know you're pretty robust in the build to rent space. Is that now in Florida where you live?
Yeah. Yeah. So it went from, wholesaling a ton of deals at the time from the auctions to, okay, I've made enough wholesale fees that I can afford to buy one and do a flip on it. Or really the first one I bought was a rental. I bought it for $7,200. I put another, $7,000. I know $7,000 for a house, it sounds crazy, but this is Memphis. And you being from Chicago, you probably know a little bit about Memphis. But anyways, it's just a really,
so I own a 30,000 square foot warehouse in South Memphis. I know Memphis. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Memphis too. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's right.
You go there at night?
No, we don't go there very often at all, but it's rented and it's doing its thing, and there's a thriving business operating out there. So we're happy we could be a part of it.
No, you picked a great spot, a great type of real estate there, because it's a killer warehouse hub, especially being right in the middle of the country and FedEx and, all that kind of stuff. It has its perks for sure. But the space that I started in, $7,000 houses, terrible tenant quality, and you never know what's going to happen, never know what you're going to get, including if you're going to get your rent or not. So it was just a little bit of a headache. But growing up there, I always wanted to get out of there. Just wasn't the most attractive, most appealing, fun city that I wanted to spend my life in. So I always wanted to leave there and come to Florida. So I left, came to Florida after a couple of years of doing those wholesale deals. Build to rent still wasn't in the cards. I mean, you're still talking about it was costing more to build than it was that you could sell it for at the time because we're still in a depression. But, you know, went and thought I could do the same thing in Florida and had a little bit of money. I remember I had 99,000 and some change, and I thought, man, I almost got 100 grand. And I was like 19. And I saw negative $5,000 in overdraft charges before I saw the 100, even though I was that close. Because I,
oh wow,
my head just thought, oh, you made it. Let me go. And I'm too big for my shoes now. So go to Florida. I think I can do the same thing. But people with money are actually in nice places. So, you know, there's a lot more competition. The rules were more, they weren't as lax, because there you didn't have to bring the cash to the auction. I could sweet talk the auctioneer and get 3 days to pay for it, which that meant I could find a wholesale cash buyer that would pay for it, send their money to the auction company, and the auction company would actually cut me the check for the difference to my name. So they were paying me my wholesale fees. So that was cool. And I thought, oh boy, if I'm doing this, I'm going to go do it in a place I want to, you know, enjoy living in. So didn't do any research, just thought I'll move and just figure it out. But I moved and life figured it out for me. It said, oh, you got to figure something else out. So I went negative. But during that time, I was trying everything back against the wall to try to make a buck. And I came across a hedge fund at the time that was buying property in Memphis. So I was like, okay. So I remember trying to get them a package of property that would have made me, you know, all the money that I'd spent, it would have made it back. Very close to making the deal happen. Didn't happen. And I remember being super depressed, super let down. But at the time, I put all my eggs in that basket. And I don't ever recommend that anymore. And you learn these lessons as you go. Yeah, so fell on my face. But at the same time, trying to put that deal together, I met another hedge fund acquisition manager that decided they wanted to start buying build to rent product. Or I don't even think it was named that at the time because it wasn't a thing. This was 2014. And that hedge fund now is one of the largest ones in the country, or probably the world, as far as the rental space, and publicly traded American Homes for Rent. And I'm proud to say that we sold them their first. It was a batch of only three, but we sold them their first three new construction homes that they, you know, rented out. And they were in Memphis, Tennessee. So pretty proud of that, because now they don't even buy new product. They've got their own division where they're building neighborhoods of build to rent product in the hottest areas. It's all in-house operations now. So they won't buy off of me or D.R. Horton or anybody. So anyways, that was that. And I never knew how to build a house. So my father, you know, I told him I got a deal together. He was always construction. I said, let me be your little, I don't know if I can say a bad word on here. Okay. But let me be your little B, and you just boss me around, point your finger, and you just answer any questions and just explain everything. I want to know everything about this. So anyways, I did that just for the brokerage fee, you know, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, getting back at 7, 8 o'clock at night, and just being a hard working labor guy or whatever I had to be for that day just to learn. So
Nice. So you built those first three houses for American Homes for Rent then. You and your dad put that together, I assume?
My dad and his partner, and I put the deal together, but they had the construction background and they knew all the subcontractors and contacts to make everything, you know, get built well and all that. And it was me, you know, I knew the real estate side. I knew the sales side. I put that side together. And then I said, look, I don't want any extra. I just want to be there every day and learn it, because I can tell this can turn into something.
So 2014, how much was each house sold to them for? What was the B2C price there?
2320 square feet houses, 4-bedroom, 2.5-bathroom, all brick, granite countertops, tile flooring, and laminated flooring. I mean, so we're just not talking super, super cheap. Okay. Now I'm telling you the price and it's going to sound super, super cheap. Those houses, we sold to them for $165,000 a piece.
Nice.
$165,000. And they had them pre-sold before I said, don't sell them to them. Let me sell them to my people. They had them pre-sold to retail buyers for $145,000. I said, please don't do that. Let me get you some more money. American Homes paid $20,000 extra a door.
Oh, you mean dad had them sold for $145? Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. So you kind of had the product in the periphery. It wasn't like, let me go sell three and then build them. The three were already in the process of being built. And
it's always been like that with my father's mentality. I think I've kind of picked that up as well, where we want to be safer than not on the front end, especially given the environment and the nature of what was going on in the world that time. Like, there was literally no building going on. So like that year, I remember there was like 12 houses total that we ended up building, you know, including those three. And we were, I think that was top five permit pullers on new construction in all of Shelby County. And Memphis, you know, we're talking 1 million people in the population. So when you're top five at pulling permits and you've only pulled 12 for the year, that just shows how dead space is or was. So yeah, before they even bought the lots, I'm sure that they were trying to line up some sort of an end buyer, you know, before that even happened. I don't remember the specifics on that, but that's just sort of been how our mentality's been.
Okay. So fast forward, we're at 2024. It's been 10 years now. What does the volume of your build to rent business look like today? How does it function? Are you the owner managing the portfolio? Are you the hedge fund now? Or is there like some mix of, fill me in on what it looks like today, Brock?
Yeah. So today, fast forward, we've got three companies. One of them, the construction company that, you know, builds, that's the one that's on my shirt here. It's called Brock One. Also, you might see it's called as Brock Homes. But that is, you know, in 2022, we built 188 houses. In 2023, that was closer to like 96, I think. So it got cut back significantly. And that was really, I guess, probably sort of from the scars that I saw as a child, where I was afraid to lose everything. I saw all these guys that had nice big boats and cars and trucks and houses. And then the next thing you know, that real estate market hit and they're bankrupt and they're laying off people and they're losing all that stuff. I did not want to be in that position or put my family in that type of position. So instead, you know, probably became a little, you know, nervous and wanted to pull the reins back a little bit for last year, which if I could take that back, no, I wouldn't do that. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that I put half of my energy and effort into the business side. I probably doubled down my energy and effort and attention on the systems and the processes. And actually, we doubled our staff from like 8 people to now we've got 17 people that are, you know, doing something in our organization every day that are in-house. That doesn't include the subcontractors, obviously, or we would never get, you know, a lot of houses built. So anyways, that happened and I've put so much attention on that so that when we do ramp this stuff back up, which I'm starting to this year for sure. Next year, I think I'm more confidence even comes back into the marketplace. I think clarity starts to come in from now till next year. But we are definitely in a much better position to, especially as a business owner, to kind of see things operate, you know, more like a machine instead of fire drills every time something goes wrong. It might look okay from the outside, but when you are in the inside and see the operations and you see little chaos in different areas, those are the kind of problems that I'm trying to solve while we were slower on volume.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I don't think anyone could be faulted for the pullback in 2023. I mean, if we went to when the interest rates hiked, I think what, middle of the summer 2022, man, it was like a moment of panic. And that moment of panic through the winter market of 2022 to 2023, I honestly did not think the prices were going to hold up when the spring market came. I thought for sure we're going to see 5, 10, 15% instantaneous decrease in price. And that's not what happened, right? Yeah, I mean, people slowed down, and I think, like, to your point, the confidence builder sentiment and the vacancy rate is the one thing that I continue to look at. So the HUD publishes the vacancy rate in the four quadrants of the country, and I want to say the average is 0.6%, and that's down from 2.4, 2.6, give or take, all of my career going all the way back through the 90s.
You said HUD actually puts that out. That's super interesting.
Yeah. The HUD, if you do HUD home ownership occupancy rate, there's a report that comes out once a quarter And then and they also published one for multifamily rental apartment data. I forget what that one is because I'm not heavy in that, but even that vacancy rate has been alarmingly low since 2019, 2018. It's been trending down. So all this housing shortage stuff you hear on the headlines, there's truth to that. And this is a very slow lagging indicator. And it's like there are some other stats too that go into like pushing the demand that probably are a good reason to have confidence in the market. Could we see some cooling off of prices if demand is completely saturated of 2-4%? Maybe in certain markets, yeah, Phoenix and maybe Florida's a little overheated. Obviously, California, San Francisco, some of the central business districts. But I think that a lot of these neighborhoods throughout the United States are going to remain relatively stable compared to what we saw in 2009.
I'm just telling my people that are hearing this, that the HUD occupancy rate, let's write that down, okay? I know that seems small, but we should already.
Yeah, it's alarming. I mean, if you're paying attention to numbers, that 0.6% it's shockingly low. And I've tracked vacant houses in all of my markets since 2013. And I don't have them like written down on a spreadsheet. It's just a number that I've always been checking and looking into. And like the number of vacant houses has been cut at least in half, maybe more than half. In your big cities like Philadelphia, Atlanta, the city of Chicago. If you go into like vacation markets such as Jersey Shore or all up and down Florida, the vacancy rates can be deceiving because people have their second homes there. So the houses count as vacant, but I don't know how that falls into the data for HUD. But, you know, the Airbnb pulling inventory off, the age of the millennial becoming home buyers in the last 4, 5, 10 years, probably going to continue. I mean, the list could go on and on to build the confidence to pull the trigger, you know, in 2024 and forward.
Yeah, for sure, man. I love that. Yeah, because we're trying to get newsletters to go out to our investors. And, you know, I refuse to drop a newsletter without some nice, accurate statistics. And, you know, we're trying to find the best place to get all this kind of data. So I love that one to include in our little report. So,
and the other one to check, which I haven't checked lately, but for the listeners as well, is Zillow actually produces a robust data set. So you can get the number of active listings that are on the market month by month going back. I forget how many years that they have it, but you can literally put a couple simple calculations into the Excel spreadsheet and sort them. And you can see, you know, how the markets have declined, increased in inventory and things of that nature. So it's free. And I can't believe that Zillow publishes that. I think Zillow data would be the thing you would search on Google, Zillow data sets, something like that. And there's a whole queue there. You can pull all sorts of stuff from Zillow for free. It's been a great resource. I don't check it often, but if you check in, you know, once a year, every 2 years, maybe you're hunting for markets around the country where it makes sense. But that's another great free data set that's out there.
I love that, Dan. I'm a nerd. I'm a geek when it comes to that kind of stuff. So
nice. Nice. So these 188 and 95 houses and whatever is about to go under construction now, still in Memphis or are you in another market now?
No, 100% out of Memphis. Proud as hell to be from there and to be born there. But also, I don't know, I might be more proud to be out of there. So yeah, down in Florida, 100% Florida right now. You know, I've had other opportunities where we could do stuff in some of these other nice markets, North Carolina or Texas or, you know, Alabama or some of these other places that are getting attention right now. But I am solely focused on the Sunshine State. I think it's a killer investment. I read these old articles too, and you read stuff from the 70s about California, and you could take California out and put Florida in and update the dates to the last couple of years. And it's like you're looking at the same stuff. So a lot of our investors come from California, and a lot of that money comes from property that they bought for 200 grand and they just sold it now for 3 million and they're going to buy 10 houses with us, you know? So that happens a lot. And that's why, I don't know, if the same thing is right, if I'm right, then everything that is coming to Florida, like this is the place to be. So I want to put all my energy here until at least we've got things running smooth enough where I don't need to put my energy on it. But yeah, we work and operate close to Orlando market. So Orlando, Point Siena, Kissimmee area, then coming down I-4, we're in Winter Haven,
You know, we're trying to get into some of the little markets along the way, like Auburndale and Lakeland. Then you keep coming further south. We are in Sarasota County, where I'm at right now, Northport. So Northport, number two fastest growing city in the entire country last year. I think it's top three over the last 3 or 4 years. Two of those years, it was the number one drop-off destination for U-Haul. So that's another data point I like. You know, so most trucks out of any destination that people are moving to, they're dropping them off in Northport. So it's costing, it cost out the ass for people to move here because they're like, we got too many U-Hauls. But they'll pay you to take that thing back to California or New York. So, you know, great stat there. And I mean, even if you talk to some of these other building companies down here, like I had Adams Homes, one of the high up guys we were talking yesterday, and they're talking about how Northport is so on fire and their biggest problem is they can't build them fast enough for these. And they deal with retail buyers and they say that Northport is like the new Sarasota and everybody wants to be in Northport. But it's like half the price of Sarasota. So that's why we're really heavy here. Then you keep going further south. We've got quite a bit about to get started in Punta Gorda, Fort Charlotte, as well as Cape Coral. And then we just started managing some other new builds built by other builders, you know, further south in like Lehigh Acres, LaBelle, that kind of area, closer to Fort Myers, Naples.
So let's walk through like a recent development. Are these all scattered site development, meaning like one in this development, one here? Or are you picking up like a 3 to 5? Like, give me your ideal land, vacant land target and the number of units, if it's more than one, that you would like to build, let's say, on the next project if it comes through the door tomorrow.
This is the biggest pain in the ass, or the butt. I'm sorry. You know, I'm a contractor, so my bad words will slip out.
All good.
So the biggest pain here is the areas that we operate in and that really we could afford to get started in, because we got to compete with the national builders who can go stroke a $20 million check for a development from a developer and have everything in one beautiful location. We're not able to compete like that because we don't have outside funds like this. We're not a syndication, anything like that. So the majority of our projects are being built on infill lots, and it makes it a lot more difficult to do 100 like that than it would be to do 100 in one area, because we're dealing with 100. Well, probably out of 100 houses, we probably dealt with 90 different sellers. So a few of those will have, a few of those will have a couple of lots. Some of them will have 20, you know, great. But at the same time, it's rare. And these things, these lots have been here since the 60s and 70s, and they were sold as investments to, you know, the Northerners back then, for like $2,000, $3,000. And really these areas haven't had so much attention put on them ever since then, that the lots have been sitting there. And now like they're running out of areas to live in Sarasota or Tampa or these other places. So it just keeps spreading. And now these areas are filling in really fast. And you've seen lot values come way up from, you know, back in that depression area, just 10, 15 years ago, these lots were same prices they paid in the 80s and the 70s, $2,000, $3,000. Now they're going for, you know, in Northport area with these aren't, if they're on septic, they're going for $20,000, $25,000 a piece. And Central Florida, which the area is even less, you know, it's not up to par as Northport at all. Those lots that have sewer and water and all that, they're going for $65,000 a piece. Same thing was going for $3,000 or $4,000 not long ago. And now these areas are, you know, they're getting built out. And as they get more built out, values are creeping up even higher.
Okay. Are you finding them listed on the market, or are you like doing this whole direct to seller thing? What are you doing to find these lots?
We'll do a little bit of both. So we have a CRM system that will do a lot of text, direct text to seller, which works out. It's a little easier for us due to the system and the fact that we've got our own real estate brokerage. So we can easily run in, you know, the tools that they give you as a real estate licensed person.
and run our own reports based on area, based on vacant land, based on zip code or subdivision code, and then just download an Excel sheet with 3,000 different lots and their owner's information. And then we have somebody on our team that can go into, you know, they say the FBI database and give us all their phone numbers and emails and all that kind of stuff, so we can reach out direct to them. So we do a lot of that. We also, the more active that we are in these areas, the more wholesalers that we meet. So they'll just help. They probably sent us 20 lots today to look at. We're just selective on what we get though as well. And you know, then the whole other side, if we need something fast and we need it now, then we go right to the MLS and we'll just buy it off of there. So okay, we utilize any bit.
So let's walk through one of these deals. You buy it for 65 grand. There's a sewer there. It costs you how much to build? You're selling it for how much? How much does it rent for? And what is the specs on that house?
Yeah. So for example, a Point Sana Central Florida build. So we're talking $65,000 for the land. We're going to spend roughly 200K on the construction. And then that house sells for $320,000 to investors and $350 to retail, the small percentage that we do retail. With rates where they're at, it's making extremely difficult to cash flow to cash flow great in that area in particular. So what we're doing is since I've got the management company for the first 2 years, I'm given free property management. And I'm doing that as a credit. So they would still see that come out every month. But as soon as we sign the lease, I'm writing them a check for the full 2 years of property management up front. So that kind of makes everybody feel, you know, like we're winding the clock back a couple of years where the cash flow is there, because it's only a matter of time. I mean, you add enough time to any real estate deal. If
they're in the right location, which is where we're at, then you see rents come up, you see values come up. And then you add enough time as well, you're going to see interest rates come down because the Fed has just borrowed too much damn money. So that, you know, they have no choice in the long haul but to have rates come back down, which will make it's a recipe for success. It just requires a little bit of time. But those deals right there, a year and a half ago, at peak rent, $2,300 a month. Now today, they have come off a little bit, but we're seeing an average of probably $2,150 a month.
But what I'm also doing in addition to that free management is I'm doing a rent gap credit. So if I get them $2,150 a month, I'm for the first 2 years, I'm also going to make the difference between my high rent, which was a year and a half ago, the $2,300, and what we've signed the lease for. So $150 times 24 months comes with that credit of the property management fee.
And are you seeing your investor buyers bring 20-25% down, or are these generally going to be like cash California kind of things?
Well, a little bit of both. I'd say, you know, like, I don't know, like right before the end of the year, everybody thought bonus depreciation was going away. We had multiple buyers that were buying 8, 10, 12 properties, and a couple of them were cash and a couple of them were all financed. Then we've got, you know, the majority is going to be, 20 to 25% down, most likely 25 down in the last couple of years, just to make that debt service coverage ratio number be more attractive from a lending standpoint. And plus on top of that, all my pro formas right now are at 25%. I think that's a much safer route for people to take at the moment. Not that I think anything bad is going to happen, but the last thing you want to do in real estate is lose the property. So,
yeah. And I think from my perspective, so I was dirt broke when I got into the business. So it was always like, you know, I was kind of more the Robert Kiyosaki, the cash flow. Hopefully I could get to this point where I'm free and the cash flow from the rentals is paying. I never got there, but I created a cash machine that we can actively just flip houses and do a bunch of deals and make a bunch of money off of it. And then I bought rentals as this like form of an IRA, a savings, if you will, just a different way to store the value, right? Some people, you could store it in crypto, store value, you could store it in gold, you could store it in a bank account, making a little interest, you could store it into a stock, or I could store it into some apartment buildings. And that's kind of the way I think about it. I think that the new construction build to rent in an infill neighborhood is a cool way to store that value. even if, I mean, the 2150's got to pay the taxes, the insurance, and the mortgage payment, right? It's got to do that. But that gives you the opportunity to put $65,000, maybe $80,000, $85,000 down if you're at 25% on a $320,000 house and park that into an asset that's built in 2023. And that's phenomenal, right? Because when I'm in these infill property areas where we have them all over the place, Illinois, Atlanta, a little bit in Philly out in the suburbs, and we have these areas that were built over different, 20-year period. So you'll have this cycle of houses that came through in the 80s, and then the market crashed from the savings and loan around 1990. And then you get another round that came through in the mid to late 90s and are built a certain way. They're a little nicer, right? It's a newer vintage. And then again, probably died down again as the dot-com bubble burst. And then you got your 2002 to 2007 builds that show up in that same neighborhood. And those are going to be the ones that still sell for the most money. So if I'm buying a $320,000 house from one of these areas and it's the newest house with proper closet design and layout and 2023 build, newer technologies, newer wiring, all of that stuff compared to the stuff in the 60s, it would ideally be the most desirable house in the neighborhood when I went to sell the property. And I think that the build to rent with new construction is also good because you're going to get lower maintenance costs. Properties I bought and did a complete renovation, my maintenance headache emails from the management company come at a lot lower frequency than the stuff that I have inherited tenants in a 8-unit building that had been there for 10 years before I bought it 6 years ago in their old dated unit. We're constantly doing stuff there. As we touch on the condition, is there any kind of builder's warranty or something of that nature that buyers would get, or is it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we give everybody a 1-year workmanship warranty as far as like anything that falls apart that shouldn't fall apart. And if anything happens like that, then we're there to fix it. And that includes obviously mechanical, electrical, plumbing. I mean, so all the subcontractors we use are extremely well qualified. They're extremely, they're extreme professional companies that the national builders are using on their stuff, and not that. That shouldn't scare anybody, because I know national builders have a bad rep as far as quality goes, but it's more about the manager of the project along, the lifetime of the project being built, and how detailed is that manager? We have checklists for every single stage, and that allows us to build them faster than anybody around. And I truly believe with less warranty calls than any of these other guys have. Because we don't want to come back. We lose money when we come back. But at the same time, we have to guarantee our product. So there's that side. In addition to that, there's a 10-year structural warranty. So anything happens foundation-wise, anything like that, we are liable for. We come back, we take care of it. With these being brand new properties, like you said, these low maintenance costs. I ran a report last year on the oldest ones that I had that were, because I sold anything that I had before when I started back here. They were 3.5 years old, 4 years old. My average repair and maintenance bill monthly on these houses was $2.80-something a month per unit. And anybody that owns real estate and rental property, I mean, it gives me like goosebumps thinking about that, because it's just new construction. It's the quality of the build and on top of that, the type of finishes that we use. I don't know if you saw our product yet, but if you go to mynewrental.com, that's our property management company, you'll see the type of product that we build at Brock One. And it's not your average rental property. I mean, these are modern. They stand out. They're desirable. They're going to attract higher quality tenants. The tenants are going to pay more than they're going to pay next door, because who wouldn't when you see these houses? And they're going to stay longer, and they're going to keep the property up better and be more proud to be where they're at. On the whole other side of the coin, if an investor is ready to, liquidate their properties or trade them in for something else, the value is going to be there, and the appreciation should probably hit your property more than it does the house next door, just for the fact of what it looks like and the type of finishes that we put in there. So, we might be in retail areas, even though they're infill. These national builders still have offices next to us in these different areas. So DR, Horton, LGI, Miranda, all these guys, they've got their model homes and everything like that. nobody offers a standard product like we do. Nobody. And their stuff is going for retail buyers and ours is for investors. But I'm just a younger guy. I like good looking stuff. And I think for all the reasons I said before, you know, that coupled with being proud to own the investment that you own, it goes a long ways. So yeah, we put in all tile flooring. So there's no carpets being torn out when the tenants move out. All quartz countertops. So you don't have to worry about the lamination coming off there. Or if it were marble or granite, some of that stuff stains. This stuff does not stain. If you got some wine drinkers that are tenants, we got, you know, wood, solid wood cabinets. So none of the particle board stuff that, you know, if there's a leak under the sink and the tenants don't want to tell you about it for 2 months, you don't have to worry about tearing the cabinets out and replacing them. It's all hardwood. It's, you know, we go a long way. We do concrete block construction. When you see a lot of other build to rent guys, in Florida in particular, doing wood frame, it costs a lot more to do concrete block, but you know, we're going to have cheaper insurance costs. The property is going to last longer. When you sell it, a retail buyer is not going to want to buy the wood compared to the concrete. And just
right.
And one last big thing that we do that you don't see in any retail house, when we get to our coastal areas, we're putting in hurricane impact windows and doors, which, you know, if you've got 1,000 properties in your portfolio and you see Hurricane Ian rolling your way with 165 mile an hour winds, you got enough headaches to have instead of worrying about did they pull the patio furniture inside and did they put the hurricane shutters over the windows? Okay, now we just have to worry, did they put the patio furniture inside? But even if they didn't and it blows a chair through a window, it's going to bounce off the window now because we use nice products. So just another huge thing, you know, that goes a long ways with the way that we're doing business here.
Nice. Yeah, they really are good looking properties here. I pulled up the website while you were talking and it's ceramic tile floor. I mean, I might say that the finishes here are even a little nicer than the place I bought myself in Florida.
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's cool. Yeah. And the block construction. I mean, I think a lot of people from around the country would hear that and say that makes sense. I'm amazed that you could even build frame houses. Still in Florida, are they the block construction? Are they also pouring the concrete down in December?
And on top of that, Dan, we're like, if I'm looking at a plan, because we want to make the plan perfect, and then it's like that's the recipe, and then it goes out, and then the team runs with it, like it's so they can do it on volume and scale with as little amount of headaches as possible and as much predictability as possible. But before we let that plan go out and to our team's hands and just where they can order it on new lots, we really look at these things to see where can we make it more strong with just any little detail. That's one of them. So we don't stop at minimum engineering standards. If we're on the coast, if we think we can add an extra couple pieces of rebar and downsells that will get poured with solid concrete, then we add them. So yeah, definitely all these, not all the walls are poured solid, which you'll rarely find unless you're talking skyscraper type or, you know, big building type things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's every 6 feet here is what we do that we pour
down. You kind of make like a reinforced rebar post of concrete every 6 feet then. Okay.
And then the entire perimeter on these concrete block construction properties are filled with concrete. Yeah, with rebar
down
into the slab.
Wow. That's what has to be done in Florida. Are you building any of these in flood zones?
Not one, no. You know, goes back to the cash flow. So, and the durability of the investment. You know, can we build them in flood zones and then raise them out like we're required to? Yeah, we can. But I'm not trying to, like I said, I want to keep as much as I can. If I get a buyer that backs out, if it doesn't hit my criteria, then why would I want to keep it? I don't want to put myself in that position, nor do I want to put any of my investors in that kind of position that are going to require a $2,000 a year flood policy and kill your cash flow for the first 2 to 3 years. It's not predictable. It doesn't feel good to go to sleep at night knowing you own a portfolio full of flood zones in Florida.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you're a young guy. What are you, like 30, 32, somewhere in there?
Yeah, I'm 31.
That's pretty cool. And I'm like, I'm wondering, I'm 43 and I'm wondering, it's like, well, we did 98, we did 100, was 198, we 200 houses in 22. And I think you're an interesting build to rent, kind of a boutique provider. So there's other build to rent providers out there who are doing 1500 and 2000 and 2500. But to your point, some of the product they're building is it's in the flood zone and they lifted it up. It's the wood frame construction. It is the LVP kind of plank flooring, a little less expensive than the ceramic that's in the houses, at least I checked out here. And I'm like, is there a day when Brock ever compromises the quality to get to the quantity? And hopefully not, for the sake of the investors who are doing business. And it's just
Not a chance. I've had network providers that bring us a lot of investors and a lot of deals that there's, especially in the last couple of years, tried to push me around and tell me how I need to lower, get my prices lower so the cash flow can happen better. And I'm like, they're like, oh, well, you can put carpet in. Oh, you can put fiberglass stalls in the shower. Oh, you can go out of wood. Oh, you can use a cheaper shingle. But no. And no, I'm not doing it. Because, you know, the biggest thing is long-term investment. Like, that's what people are buying this for. They're not, if you want to talk about what's going to underwrite and perform better on a pro forma for the first 6 months, then yeah, we can build a piece of junk product. But at the same time, you put it through a couple hurricanes, you put it, even with no hurricanes, you put it through this extreme heat and humidity and all this kind of stuff. I don't even want to see the termites that would come in and eat the wood walls. You know, I mean, just all this kind of, it's just, I like doing things the right way. And I'm, like you said, I'm a young dude. I want to be around in the space forever. And I want people, I don't want 20 years from now, people to say, oh, he said this would last forever. Oh, this would do that. And point the finger at me. I'm going to do anything I can to make sure that, you know, things perform the best they can.
Nice. Yeah. And they are good looking houses. They're definitely not cookie cutter. It seems like the style was there, a little more money spent on those exterior doors and things to make them really pop. If anyone's curious, go check out my newrental.com. It's worth the visit there. And Brock, I know we're going to get to our wrap up section here in a moment. Is there anywhere else that if someone was kind of interested in maybe taking a look and kicking the tires to maybe buy one of these that they should go check out another site than we gave them?
Yeah. Look, follow me on Instagram. I just started trying to get up, you know, get more active online, which I'm active. I'm active on there, but shoot me a direct message on there. My tag is @follow.brock. And plus I'm constantly trying to put out little videos about really what we do here every day. And, you know, even if you're not interested in buying off of us, just get on there and give me a follow and give me some love. I promise we're trying to add value for free to anybody that's watching that. You know, whether it be how much it costs to do a roof or, you know, just if you're going to self-manage your own deals, what to do or anything like that. But we've also, I've got a form, a link on My New Rental. So mynewrental.com/invest. If any listener went to that and filled a form out, it would go to our sales team and we would get on a call and get a call scheduled and figure out how we can help you get one of these investment properties down here.
Nice. So my final questions here. First one, book recommendations. Was there a book or any books maybe you read that were impactful for you or you feel like might be impactful for our audience full of real estate investors?
Yeah, I know everybody's heard this one, okay? But I got to give you two of them. I know I won't even say it. Well, I'll say it. Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I felt so smart, like I was saying earlier. And then like the biggest thing that wake up call was like, rental property felt like a waste of time when I was younger. I was like, I'm trying to get rich quick. And even though I had two of them, I sold them. After reading that book, I couldn't even stop there. I think the even better book to me was Cashflow Quadrant, the one right after it. I enjoyed that better. But the Rich Dad, Poor Dad deal, that just woke me up like bang. Like I've been missing this. I felt so stupid. I felt like I had 7 years in the real estate game and pushed, you know, $50-100 million worth of stuff. And I could have found out ways to keep more and I didn't have anything to show for it. So that was the big thing. And then my second book, which you know, I read this. I'm not, no kidding. I read it last year six times, and I'll do audiobooks. I'm not like physically reading the book. But the 10X rule by Cardone, I mean, it's like my business Bible and life Bible. And anytime that I'm feeling like I'm slacking or I could do better in my performance or bring higher energy to the table with my team or whatever, I put that book back on. And it feels like, you know, feels like I'm a kid again where my father's just ramming his foot up my ass, you know, tell me I need to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning or I'm going to be a lazy, you know, lazy guy for the rest of my life. And that kind of energy just motivates and it hits home with me. So that book is huge for me. And I don't think we'd be anywhere today without both of those books. But those two are great.
Nice. Love it. So what about the crown jewel of wisdom, Brock? If you could go back to yourself, you're 18, 19, getting done high school, maybe you're still living in Memphis. What would be the crown jewel of wisdom, knowing everything you know now, that you would share with yourself then?
Okay. Can I give you two parts on it?
Let's do it.
Okay. The first part is if you get real estate and you're able to own the real estate, don't sell the real estate or try not to. I know you flip a hell of a lot of real estate. Okay. So you're laughing at that one. But I know that you also love your apartment houses and you love the stuff that produces a good income and that can write your taxes off. And just keep as much as you can along the way. I think that's the biggest thing. I'm not saying keep everything. Okay. But keep as much as you can. And just because it feels like you can't keep it doesn't mean there's not a way that you can, because there's always a way you can. So that's part one. I guess that's real estate related. The part two that can go in any direction, business or entrepreneurship or anything when it comes to making money or just being a great employee, is when you think that you have made it. Like earlier, I said I had almost 100 grand. I had this mentality just shut off, like, my work ethic went from 16 to 20 hours a day down to 2 or 3 days a week I'll work. And it's not going to be 16 hours. And biggest mistake, because I did that three times, man. Three times I made the money and then I went to negative. Made the money, went to negative. Every time had the same common thing in it, was my whole mentality became too lax just because I had more than I'd had in the past. And it made me feel like I can relax a little bit. Wrong mentality. Whatever you did to get that 100, keep doing it and do it better the next time, because the next 100 will turn into 1 million, and then the next 1 million will turn into 10, and there you go, you know. But if you do it and then you shut it off, and you do it and you shut it off, I mean, you're just going to be spinning your wheels the whole time.
Have you read Relentless?
You know what, I started it, I never finished it.
Okay. Yeah. Relentless. So my team, there's probably 23 guys on my team who are out there making deals. And then there's executive level there above. And we noticed that same kind of thing. Like, we're flipping some houses. We've lost pretty big money on quite a few of the houses we've attempted to flip successfully. A lot more of them have gone profitable, and that's why we're still in business. And then some small number of them, we've had the luck of the market. You know, who'd have thought it was $50,000 over the asking price here? Well, when said individual who was the recipient of the luck, and some of it is skill, they may have made a great deal in the living room, right? Combination of skill and luck, they got the right lead, whatever the case is. The bank account is full and there is a mental checking out. And so we're constantly having to kind of keep each other accountable to try to make sure, like, in a sense, I want to trick myself that I'm already broke so that I just stay hungry, right? Just stay hungry. I don't actually want to be broke, so I invest that money into assets. But Relentless by Tim Grover's, like, Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan and Steve Curry.
I did the whole thing. I know Relentless.
Okay, yeah.
Love it, man. Love that.
That's
book.
Right. That's right. So that's our prescriptive antidote to the mentally checking out when the bank account gets full. And I was succumbed to that myself a bunch of times over my career. And then the other thing, I think that probably just layer on to what you shared, both of these are great. It's like, don't mentally check out. A lot of times that happens because we're looking at X amount of money. It's the most we've ever seen. And now we're ready to take a vacation. But I think the don't sell the real estate thing, keep as much as you can. For me, I probably would have bought a little more real estate along the way. I feel like I bought as much as I responsibly could by keeping myself broke and putting my money into these hard assets I couldn't get it back out of quickly. So the money's there and it's been working quietly, some good, some fantastic, some okay, while it's been parked. And I'm at a stage in my career now where I'm testing the market with my apartment buildings and I'm selling off some of the single family stuff because I'm climbing to the next level in my own portfolio, which is like where I'm at with that 30,000 square foot place in Memphis. So I'm really trying to scale up to another level and hang on to that real estate. And I'm glad and grateful that I did buy these assets along the way because it was better for the money, number one, to grow a little bit, a lot in these assets as rentals. But it was also even better to keep me hungry in my business to make sure that my bank accounts were being swept on a regular basis.
I love that part, man. I love that part. I do the same thing. If I get a bunch of cash coming in, I have got to spend it fast. And I'm not talking about on a new watch or anything like that. It's got to go into the next thing that's going to make it grow. And
that's right.
Your money is gone. You're amped up on a whole other level. Your back's against the wall and you got to figure your stuff out now.
That's right. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, if someone's listening right now, you don't have enough money to buy the rental property. Maybe you're not ready. Maybe your credit's not ready. That's how I was. I had bad credit. I couldn't get the loan. But one of the tricks that I kind of used at that level of my career was I opened a savings account that I did not have an online access to at all. So I had to like go to the branch and put my money into that account. And then it was a hassle to get it out. And I'd forget that I even had it. It wasn't in my main checking accounts where I'm staring at this large balance telling me, whispering sweet nothings to go away on vacation and check out, not make the next phone call, things of that nature. So
yeah, that's a good idea too. It makes it easier for you to not have that temptation.
That's right. Take away the convenience. I'm not staring that money in the face. One of the little tips. So my final question, Brock, what is the kindest thing anyone has ever done for you?
Oh, man. What a question. The kindest thing anybody's ever done for me.
Oh, you stumped me here.
Oh, I guess the first auction I ever went to, a guy that I'd never done a deal with, I'd never had lunch with, anything like that. The only other young guy that was there that day, he had cash. I didn't really know what I was doing. I had a buyer for the deal and he had the cash in his pocket because they required cash. It was like one of the five auctions they required at the day of. And he loaned me. It was him and I. And he quit bidding and loaned me $29,100 right there on the spot. Got in my car with me right afterwards. Went to the bank with me. I got him the money out of the account. And then I split the fee with them, split the wholesale fee with them. We went on, you know, that act of kindness goes a long ways. And that act of kindness made me love that man. I still love that guy. Although I spent it like it was water at the time, we made, you know, at least $1 million with each other over the next year, 2 years. And,
nice.
You know, I guess that was a really kind thing of the guy. So thanks, Craig.
His name was Craig.
Yeah.
How about that? I have a Craig in my life that.
Oh, Greg. I'm sorry. Not as big.
Greg.
Yeah.
Close enough. But Craig's been that guy. He's still to this day working with me in the Philadelphia market, and it's been a wonderful thing. And he was also kind to me when I had no car and showed up at the networking event. You know. Just a ridiculous shape, but people thought I was somebody because Craig was introducing me around, you know?
Yeah, man. Those are the best people. Those are the best people.
Yeah, man. Do you want to plug the website one more time here and then we can close?
Yeah. Please go to www.mynewrental.com/invest. So mynewrental.com/invest. Fill out the form. We can get on a call. We can talk about anything.
Okay. How the weather is down here. Hopefully it's about a new investment property, but yeah, we could talk about anything. I'm dying to meet other real estate investors and entrepreneurial type people. So let's do it.
All right, cool. Thanks for coming on the show, Brock. I had a great time. I really appreciate you coming on.
Me too, Dan. I'll see you again soon.
The REI Diamond Show is sponsored by Diamond Equity Investments, a private equity firm focused on buying and selling residential and commercial property throughout the United States. If you are an accredited investor seeking double-digit returns, you can sign up to review Diamond Equity's passive investment opportunities at www.fundrehabdeals.com. And if you're an investor who is seeking deals that you can buy, fix, and flip, please go to www.dealswithroi.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.